We are Two Guys Gaming. As always, even though the music says Two Guys Gaming, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. Hello and welcome. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series I am reading and reacting to the sci-fi classic Dude by Frank Herbert. Probably been about 2 or 3 weeks since I recorded last, but I should still be able to get this one done and do the movie verses before the end of January, setting me up to do The Burning God next month and finishing up that series. The rest of the books in the Noob's Book Club series are up on the website and in the episode notes here. As I've been doing with this series and some of the others before it, I will give you a summary from supersummary.com, and then I will run through my thoughts on the section before bidding you adieu for about a week, and then I will be back with episode 4, which will be the final episode, because I want to finish up right around when the first movie finishes up. And then we'll pick up sometime before the end of the year, because the third movie is coming up, which follows another part of the story, and I can finish up this book, do the second movie, and then do the other book and the third movie. I think that about covers it for introduction, so let's get started with Dune chapter 15, still part 1. Paul and Leto meet Dr. Kynes. As a person with Fremen ancestry, Kynes notices how quote-unquote precisely Paul fits the Fremen's prophecy about a messiah, especially when Paul seems naturally adept at fitting his own stillsuit. Leto, Paul, Kynes, and Gurney use a flying machine called an ornithopter to visit a spice mining rig. A little bit of background here, a bit of an aside. When I heard ornithopter, I wondered if Frank Herbert had in fact invented the flying machine, but I don't think he did. I looked it up, but now I can't remember. You know, hey, you get what you pay for with this one, right? Anyway, back to the summary. During the flight, they discuss the ecology of Arrakis, the maliciousness of the Harkonnens, and the sandworms that are large enough to destroy a spice mining rig. They arrive at a rig just in time to see it try to avoid a sandworm attack. However, the machines break, leaving the rig vulnerable to the sandworm. Leto insists that they rescue the men on the rig rather than allow the sandworm to kill them. He lands the ornithopter, rescues the men, and escapes just in time. Paul sees two Fremen fleeing the scene. Privately, Kynes decides that Leto is worthy of his respect. Chapter 16. Summary. As Leto prepares for a banquet thrown by Lady Jessica, he thinks about a cruel Harkonnen tradition that involves selling wastewater to the people of Arrakis. He issues in an order that, during the banquet, water will be given to anyone who needs it. At the dinner, he observes Paul's diplomatic manner and believes that his son is destined to be a good duke. He also watches a man named Esmer Twick, a spice smuggler. Thanks to her Bene Gesserit abilities, Jessica knows that Tuik can be bribed into helping them escape from Arrakis if needed. She also recognizes that a banker at the dinner is a Harkonnen agent. The banker's references to the Duke's emergency escapades earlier in the day agitate an already angry Leto. When the banker begins talking about the cannibalistic birds of Arrakis, Paul gently mocks the banker and asks whether he would ever eat his own kind. The banker replies by mocking the Fremen custom of preserving the water from a dead body. Jessica notices that the banker is terrified of Kynes, quote-unquote, while the smuggler appears to be Kynes' ally. As the conversation turns to the question of whether Arrakis can ever be more habitable, the Duke is called away on urgent business, and Paul takes over hosting duties. Paul, also aware of the banker's loyalty to the Harkonnens, tells stories about traitors in a thinly veiled joke. The other guests steer the conversation away from causing any offense. As Jessica discusses the rumors of a huge spice reserve in a dangerous area, Leto sends a message. He assures his guests that all is well, and a spice mining rig has been found. He blames a Harkonnen spy for hijacking the machine. Paul compliments his father's ability to deal with any issue, but Jessica worries about her son's boasts. Chapter 17. Summary. That night, Jessica is woken by the sound of Duncan Idaho drinking heavily. She cannot calm him down, not even with the help of Dr. Yeh. Idaho drunkenly accuses Jessica of being a Harkonnen spy. After sending Idaho to his room, Jessica confronts the fear Hawat. She chooses not to reveal her quote-unquote quote Trump, that she is pregnant with Duke Leto's daughter and therefore cannot possibly be a traitor. Instead, they consider the other suspects. They rule out Idaho, Gurney, and Yeh. Once again, Yeh. That guy. How'd he get away with it? Jessica discusses her Bene Gesserit powers and Howitt's mentat abilities. Although Howitt never entirely rejects the idea that Jessica is a spy, he cannot help but admire her. Chapter 18, Summary. After receiving a cryptic message, Leto decides to tell Jessica why he has treated her coldly in recent days. On his way to find her, he discovers the dead body of Esmar Tuik nearby the Shadow Mapes, mumbles a few words, and then dies of a stab wound. Leto is hit in the neck by a poison dart. He collapses, but does not lose consciousness. Yeh finally reveals himself as the traitor, while Leto is paralyzed. As well as poisoning the Duke, Yeh has lowered his shields in preparation for the Harkonnen attack. However, he has a plan to assassinate the Baron. Yeh explains that he will replace one of the Duke's teeth with a fake tooth containing a poison capsule. When the Baron is near the Duke must bite down hard and release the poison directly into the Baron's face. Leto will die, but he will take the Baron with him. In return, Yeh promises to save Paul and Jessica by sending them to live with the Fremen. Leto loses consciousness. Chapter 19, Summary. I don't think I mentioned, but this is the last chapter I'm going to do. And then I'll do 20, 21, 22, 23, 24 in the next episode. Jessica wakes up in the dark. Realizing she is tied up, she pretends to be asleep. Baron Harkonnen enters, carried by the quote-unquote portable suspenders that lift his massive weight. He knows that she is awake. Jessica realizes that Yeh is the traitor. Piter DeVries enters. The Baron promised Jessica to him as a prize, but now the Baron offers Piter control of Arrakis instead. Piter accepts the offer, leading Jessica to realize that the Baron has considered every possibility. Jessica and Paul are placed in an ornithopter by two Harkonnen henchmen named Kinnet and Sigo. As the ornithopter flies over the desert, Paul tries to use the voice on the men. He succeeds in making one remove Jessica's gag. This allows Jessica, who is far more adept at using the voice, to overpower the henchmen and escape with Paul. They collect the still suits left for them by Yeh and escape into the desert as another ornithopter chases after them. My goodness, the intrigue, the excitement, I had another word there, I forgot it. Suspense. There we go. Okay. Anyway, so I talked about the tension, I talked about the chess game in previous episodes. This is the one where everything finally comes together and supposedly pays off for the Baron, but as we saw, it doesn't really, because Yeh is trying to double-cross the Baron by using Leto to assassinate the Baron. He lets Jessica and Paul get away. You can tell that he was, if not torn by his actions, he was at least willing to admit that perhaps he didn't really want to betray them. He just wanted to get his wife back, because the Baron was using his wife as collateral against him to betray the Atreides. I split this section into three acts that seemed appropriate. You know, there's the rising tension, there's the climax, and then there's somewhat falling tension, although, you know, we're going to have rising tension again because we're not at the end of the book, but this was kind of like a nice three-act play, so to speak, in the middle of the book. So, in Act 1, I'm going to consider Chapter 15 and 16. As I was reading, I thought Leto was trying maybe a little bit too hard to convince everyone that he's not a Harkonnen. I mean, I agree with his instincts, but maybe not his methods. He's looking to both embarrass the Harkonnens and those on the planet who go along with the Harkonnens and their cruelty. I'm actually much more sympathetic to those under autocracy like the Harkonnen rule, as we ourselves slide there and can only watch. You know, it's, we keep saying, what can we do, what can we do, what can we do, and we end up doing nothing because we're all just either shocked or disgusted or both by everything that is happening, and it doesn't allow our system to really respond in any useful way. So I definitely sympathize with those who are under the Harkonnen's rule, because again, what are you going to do? They're way more powerful, they're way richer, they're everything that you're not, and it's just not a good place. With all that being said, shame them if you must, but also understand that no place is safe and nobody is immune to this happening to them, against them, in their name, whatever you want to say. At the same banquet, we get more insight into Jessica. She susses out a couple of people. This shows that she's probably too close to Yeh to determine that he's the traitor. I said earlier that I think she might have been too close, or what was the other word that I used? I think that's sort of what the conclusion that I came to is that she was too close to come to a conclusion that Yuh could possibly be the spy. We heard again that they eliminated him as one of the spies, which seems odd when you think about the dinner and how she, the banquet and how she figured out that these two guys, one was working for them, one was a Harkonnen plant, that sort of thing. So she's definitely, there's something blocking her from figuring out that Yuh is a traitor and a spy. That emergency gives us some insight into Paul as a leader. Jessica does worry about his nature, but mostly because he's boastful and he's brash. I mean, you know, he's the typical nepo baby, bratty kid that thinks that he can do no wrong because most of his life he's been told that he really does no wrong. So it'll be interesting to see if and how he changes when they get out into the desert and have to survive on their own merits. It's always interesting to see how those guys either survive or don't. I have a feeling he's going to, obviously because the book's about him, but also because there is some good in him that comes from both his mother and his father that I think will ultimately win over the bratty little kid that exists there. And that's the end of Act One. Into Act Two, Chapter 16 and 17. In this part, several plots clashes one. Jessica finally gets accused out loud by the guard, and then Leto is going to go tell her that he also was using her as a potential setup to try to figure out who the actual spy was. So even though Howitt, when they're talking, he never truly rejects her as the spy because you can never be too careful. And again, you know, he's probably just working through, as a mentat, he's probably working through all the different possibilities and thinking, oh, you know, she could be the spy. It's because of this, because of that. You know, when you're a human computer, you run all of the different scenarios, and even a 1 out of 1,000 chance is a possibility. So after that all happens, as I said, Leto is coming to reveal his quote-unquote suspicions that he's using her. Instead, he finds two dead and is ambushed by Yuh. Yuh is obviously playing both sides, as we discussed earlier. Well, as I said earlier, and maybe that was part of what clouded Jessica's Bene Gesserit abilities, is that he never truly committed to the role as spy, so she maybe never saw him truly as the spy because he always knew that he was gonna use the family however he could, but also allow Jessica and Paul to escape. That could have been what was she was obviously too close to it, but also he could have clouded her ability by clouding his own mind and saying that he was doing this for the better of the family. He uses his advantage to give the old villain speech, where he gives the whole gambit away. He's going to try to kill both Duke and the Harkonnen through a murder-suicide, as you heard in the summary. That trope always gets me, where the villain just can't help himself, and he's got to give away the whole spiel about this is what I'm going to do, and this is how I'm going to do it, and it just always cracks me up when that comes around, because it always comes around to bite them, as it will with you, of course. That's the end of Act Two, where we find Jessica in Chapter 19. Everything is bared, so she shifts gears and tries to keep up with the ever-changing plot. You know, the Baron is going to give her to Piter, but then he decides that he's going to give him Arrakis instead, so which Piter accepts. And that means that Jessica really has not a bunch of use to them, so she and Paul are going to be most likely just dumped onto the planet to die. Even though that's the conclusion that she draws, she realizes that she and Paul have no chance against the Baron here and now. They've both been drugged or knocked out in some other way, and they're in no condition to fight the Baron and take him down. So instead, what they do is they play possum, they get on the Thopter. Paul tries to use the voice again, you know, the spoiled brat rich kid who thinks that he can do everything, tries and is somewhat successful, but under other circumstances, it would have been definitely a failure if mommy wasn't there to clean up after him. He does act, I mean, he gets the job partially done and allows her to come in and finish the job, which, You know, I give him credit there, I suppose. I do have to say that an assassination plot as the driving force behind the plot is a fairly bold way to start a book. Again, we knew everything that was going to happen, so how do you continue to make the book interesting and engaging to people? But Frank Herbert did so. He's a good writer, I gotta give him that. I'm surprised I never read these books before. And then taking the heroes and straining them in the face of almost certain death pushes this all way beyond anything else that I could even consider. It's, again, it's a great way to start a story. And I can't wait to see where it goes from here. As just a quick little wrap-up here, tying up some maybe loose threads that we left, later writes his own epitaph and his actions. He shows himself as the anti-Harkonnen and as a reason for the target. Again, how do you maintain that suspense when everyone knows the twist? You add to the tension and you write the reveal as an actual event. We around here don't care about spoilers. This is why. Fun is fun. Entertaining is entertaining. Leto failed, humiliated, ruined. This is not a hero's death. This is a bargain with the devil who tormented you to the breaking point. Terrible, fateful, final. Also at their lowest, Jessica and Paul respond. She takes control and leads. They have a freedom of sorts, but death stalks them on the planet. From outside, when discovered that they live. But the stage is set for Paul's ascendancy. Is he truly the one? Only time will tell. I mean, one of the books is called Doom Messiah, so pretty sure he ends up being some sort of special boy. And that is part 3, chapters 15 through 19. I'll be back with 20 through 26. 20 through 24. I'll be back with 20 through 24. Hopefully in about a week, but you know how things go around here. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer. Although I have already listened to those chapters, and I just have to jot down my notes and record. So hopefully I'll be able to get that done in a week. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us, if you haven't already, at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles. There's only been one article this month, I think, although I want to do another one pretty soon. I'm going to do a deep dive on Fallout Season 2, which started to come out. I didn't realize they were releasing it week by week, so I binged the first 5 episodes, and now I'm fiending a little bit because I need my Fallout fix. I also want to do... I can't remember what the other article is that I want to do. Let me look. Oh, it's Stranger Things. I want to do Stranger Things wrap-up and review now that that one's over. That'll be coming probably within the next week or so. There's also this podcast, my YouTube channel. The latest video that I put up has over 800 views, 19 comments, a bunch of likes, even one troll comment, so it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. Next one I'm going to put up is a comic appreciation, and then I'm going to do a couple of deep dives. Maybe just one deep dive. We'll see if I have time for both. But I really want to do a deep dive on Hero, even if I don't do one on Solaris. So keep an eye out for all those. TikTok is rolling as it always does. I think that's it for now. I'll talk to you next time. Bye, guys.
We are Two Guys Gaming.